is The Beat on WGN 720 with you till 7 o'clock tonight before Guth. Blackhawk hockey returns to our air tomorrow night, 5:30. Chris Bowden's got your pregame. Then at 6 o'clock, Sharks and the Blackhawks from the United Center. And, of course, John Weideman, Troy Murray will have every exciting minute of that one. Hawks lost a tough one last night to Winnipeg. Joe Brand is in for Carm tonight, and we are talking about the Bears and the Packers. We invite you to join us, 312-981-7200, 981-7200. How many of you have just this, fear of Aaron Rodgers? Because Aaron Rodgers doesn't really lose to the Bears, but tomorrow he will. Big, big game for the Bears tomorrow. A chance to clinch the division. They were awesome last week. If they can stop Jared Goff and the L.A. Rams offense, I certainly think that they can knock down the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. Last time that the Bears beat the Packers in Chicago, October 27th, 2010, 2017. But I think they win tomorrow. September 27th.
I remember that game. I was in college. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, me too. I was in college.
Yeah,
in 2010.
We were in the dorm that time. Yeah.
Yeah, I was there looking for food. You were a student.
I want to say game winning field goal by Robbie Gould.
Then say it.
I want to say it. I'll think about it.
Okay. Well, if it comes down to a game-winning kick tomorrow, Mason Crosby has been terrible this year for Green Bay. I love the kickers. I study kickers. Mason Crosby has been very, very off for Green Bay. It's a different Green Bay team. You know, that first night, not only would it have screwed up so many survivor pools, but that first night, if the Bears had won that game, I think that a lot of Bears fans would have been going giddy from, you know, from the jump. But when they lost to the Packers, like, here we go again. Here we go again. We found a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And Aaron Rodgers left that game, you know, half a person. And, you know, in a cart, he's gone. They're helping him off to the locker room. And then he comes back and he's, you know, throwing 75-yard touchdown passes. I hate that. But I really feel very confident tomorrow. That defense played so great last week, Joe. They were applying pressure. The front seven is strong. And everybody keeps talking about Khalil Mack. How about Akeem Hicks? Akeem Hicks has been just wonderful again this year.
Well, that's what's cool is there's so many skilled positions that the Bears are just flourishing in right now. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. everyone's in love with Eddie Jackson right now, too. And the whole Khalil Mack...
high profile.
Yeah, that's true. Khalil Mack almost seems... Granted, he deserves all the recognition he gets. But just the placebo effect that he brought in... Once he was acquired by the Bears, all of a sudden, the energy of the city and the team just spiked upwards. I mean, think about the emotional roller coaster that Bears fans have gone on since the firing of John Fox. You know, it's okay, we hire in this new guy, a whole nother. He's going to be able to figure out the quarterback and how to get this offense going because the Bears have never had a quarterback that they can rely on. And all of a sudden, you come down to where are we now? Week 15?
Mm-hmm.
And it's looking like that's coming to fruition.
Well, John Fox, of course, was a defensive coach.
Right.
And you know, Nagy is an offensive coach. And 10 years under Andy Reid, and it shows. Andy Reid's one of the offensive geniuses in this league. And Nagy keeps coming up with these plays that, you know, not only am I fascinated by the trick plays, but I'm fascinated by the names for them.
Yeah.
And he's got about seven that are named for Willy Wonka references. So, I mean, I want to talk to Nagy and ask him why Willy Wonka. I think, you know, you're talking about the skilled players on defense. How about the two guys from Georgia? You know, Roquan Smith looks to be a spectacular draft pick, and I love it that, you know, Leonard Floyd has had like a sort of a resurgence, a rebirth. And you're right, it all happens since Mac comes to the team. It's amazing how one man, you know, it's like It's a Wonderful Life, how one man's life can touch so many others, and this helps the Bears. So, you know, Trubisky... with a different defense, there's more pressure on him. You know, he can't throw the interceptions like he's been throwing. But for every interception he throws, he also takes off and runs for a first down, you know, as well as any quarterback that's not, you know, like a great running quarterback. You know, he's a very strong running quarterback, and Cutler never ran.
Mm-hmm.
He would run like once every 3 or 4 weeks. And
right.
I love it that Trubisky uses his legs as a weapon.
Well, I almost want to say Trubisky's kind of like a microcosm of the Bears right now. He's very good at a lot of different things. He's not the best at any of those aspects, but, you know, there's so many little aspects of the Bears right now that is flourishing so well. But, yeah, it does go back to the defense. It's very odd how much chemistry they have for this being the first year for this main core that's doing so well.
Right, and Allen Robinson might not play tomorrow, the biggest of the wide receiver additions, acquisitions, but the Bears have been doing a great job getting the ball to other receivers. You know, Tyler Gabriel's had a nice season, and I love the way they used Tariq Cohen, because with John Fox, it felt like they weren't using Tariq Cohen enough.
Right.
And I think, you know, Howard was rolling last week on the ground. Cohen can take a short pass and turn into a large gain. So I'm a big fan of Tariq.
Well, I just feel like that just goes to show you how well Matt Nagy is at using players at their best advantage. He's not saying, we're going to run the ball with Tariq Cohen every time. We're going to run the ball with Jordan Howard every time. We're going to do a screen pass here. We're going to, you know, try some things out. And you mentioned it, all the unique plays, all the unique names, just kind of shows
Santa Slay
how creative he is. Doesn't he have on his play chart BU in the bottom right-hand corner?
He does.
So, I mean, you got to give credit to a guy who's first year and not holding anything back. He's just going what he thinks is right at that moment. But he's not being too jumping off the ledge with these things.
Right. More Bears talk on the way, and Wayne Larrivee at a quarter till the hour. Joe Brand is here. I'm here. We're in the middle of Bears-Packers conversation on WGN Radio. Joe?
Every year is a struggle to find the perfect gift for your friends and family, and you find yourself shopping until the last minute, right? Here's the perfect gift for everyone on your list. Tastes of Chicago. It's easy. It's convenient. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's pizzas and other Chicago culinary favorites nationwide. So whether your family and friends are near or far, they'll have delicious packages delivered right to your doorstep. With a wide variety of products and packages, you'll be able to cross everyone off your list in a few easy steps by visiting loutogo.com. That's loutogo.com. You'll find something for everyone, from Lou Malnati's Chicago-style deep-dish pizza to sweet treats from Garrett Popcorn and Eli's Cheesecake, and much, much more. This year, enjoy the holiday season. Get your holiday shopping done fast by calling 1-800-LOU-TO-GO to order now. Call 1-800-LOU-TO-GO or order online 24/7 at loutogo.com.
Yep, call 1-800-LOU-TO-GO. Ask for Cap's wife. Right back with more Bears-Packers talk on the way. Joe and Harry, this is The Beat on WGN Radio.
Snap to A-Rod. Rushes on. Has time. Looking. Throws. Middle.
Yes.
Got us there. Breaking free to the 50. He may go all the way to the 20 down the right side. It is Randall.
He's
Cobb to the 5. To the end zone. To the touchdown. Oh, my goodness. Randall Cobb to the lead score.
This is The Beat on WGN Radio 720. Joe Brand hanging out. Carm is in Florida on vacay with his lovely lady friend. I'm Harry, and I don't leave town when the Bears have a chance to knock off the Packers and win the division. We go from one Hall of Fame guest to a dagger of a guest. If your plane is going to get snowed in on a Monday night at O'Hare, you want to have tortellini in the Harry Carey's by O'Hare with the great Wayne Larrivee. Wayne, thank you so much for jumping on and giving us a little time today. How the hell are you, Wayne?
Good, Harry. How are you guys doing?
We are doing good. It's exciting. Things are a little different. Wayne, that, of course, is from the Sunday night opener, and I thought Aaron Rodgers was gone. I thought we'd never see him again, and he came back, and your exciting call for Packers fans there. He won that game. Of all the things that have happened since that game in the Green Bay Packers season, what has surprised you the most?
Well, I think the game against Arizona and how they played in that game really surprised me, because Arizona is not a very good football team at all. And I know the Bears saw them earlier this year, but they outplayed the Packers at Lambeau Field, and that prompted the coaching change in Green Bay.
As Harry mentioned, you know, the opener against Green Bay, the Bears have gone one direction, the Packers have gone another. Have you talked to the coaching staff? What are they most getting prepared for against the Bears in this game?
Well, I mean, the big focus has been, of course, on the defense. That's number one. And how are you going to get it blocked up? You know, that type of thing. Because so much has happened since the opener. I didn't even go back to watch the opener, because these are two different teams. I mean, you know, look at the opener. Khalil Mack had been in Chicago for a cup of coffee, and Roquan Smith hardly played because he was just getting back into the swing of things. So things have changed drastically as far as the Bears are concerned. Furthermore, I think Trubisky has gained some maturity. You know what I mean? He's not a complete product. He's not a finished product. Nobody could expect him to be. He doesn't have a lot of starting experience, period, at any level. But, you know, I think he's steadily improved, and he's become a nice quarterback for these Bears and with the potential to be really good down the road.
Wayne, you know, you mentioned the coaching change. There's so many coaches. Tony Dungy that night went off on Green Bay. How could you do this to Mike McCarthy? And many other coaches, current and former, have gone off on the Packers. You know, I was a little surprised by it myself. The perception is that Aaron Rodgers was running the team. I don't know if that's really a fair perception for Aaron Rodgers.
I don't think it's a fair perception for him. He's taken a lot of negative publicity for what's going on. Believe me, you know, the relationship between McCarthy and Rodgers, in my opinion, was, you know, one of, you know, creative tension. If there was any tension at all, it was creative tension between two people who are very good at what they do and have a great feel for it. And that's the only thing I've ever noticed over the years. As far as this year is concerned, you know, here's the thing, and Harry, I understand what the coaches and a lot of people are saying. How could you fire a Super Bowl winning coach in the middle of the season, et cetera, and all that? But here's the thing. If you have decided, especially after that, if the Cardinals game, the way they played at home against a bad Cardinals team, crystallized what you were going to do with this particular decision down the road, then don't you owe it to the coach to say, hey, listen, we're going to go a different direction after the season. You know, let's cut ties right now. And, you know, that way we can conduct our search without having to resort to clandestine activity. And you can, by the way, go out and you're going to be the number one candidate for every other opening except this one. So I honestly think they did Mike McCarthy a favor, and I think the team did the honest thing. They knew they weren't going to retain him after this season. And if that's the case, if you come to that decision for whatever reason, then go ahead and do it now rather than wait till later and have this guy dangling in the wind, you know?
The familiar voice you hear is that of the great Wayne Larrivee. Wayne, of course, calls Green Bay Packers games and uses clandestine naturally, whereas others might have to look it up at dictionary.com. So, Wayne, the incredible...
I hope I used it right, Harry.
Well, I'm waiting for the producer to let me know if you did or not. As soon as I find out. So, the incredible comeback you guys had against the 49ers on Monday night. There's a moment in that game that I had never seen before happen. That is, your team is driving. Aaron Rodgers is, you know, ridiculous again that night. He's fantastic. He's superb. You know, dust off the superlatives. And you're down inside the 10-yard line, and you guys take a timeout, and I've never seen the quarterback just stay on the field. You know, there wasn't him coming to the sideline and conferring to the coach. Was that because he was injured, or was there some problem going on that night between McCarthy and Rodgers?
I honestly don't know, but boy, when you look back upon it, Harry, you sit there and you say to yourself, well, maybe that was just a disagreement between the two, whether to take that time out at that point in time. You know, I don't quite know. You know, I'd like to be able to say clearly that that's when it all began, but that's not it, and I don't think it's any one single incident that went into this whole thing, especially the decision to fire the coach. I don't think it was just based only on the quarterback situation and his relationship with the coach. I think that there were a lot of other factors involved, but that was a poignant moment, as you pointed out. And, you know, looking back on it, you sit there and say, well, something must have been up.
I don't mean to keep hammering the coaching change issue, but aside from Aaron Rodgers, the rest of the roster, the rest of the team, I mean, what has been their response? Where are they going for their leadership aside from Aaron Rodgers?
Well, you know, the response of the team was positive last week. They had a good week of preparation, and they played well against Atlanta. They really did. But, you know, the thing about it is leadership. I mean, you constantly are turning over your roster. The leaders emerge, or sometimes they don't. And, you know, in the case of the Packers, guys, we all have to understand, you know, take the emotion out of it. This is a roster that's under, you know, transition. I know all rosters in the NFL are under transition to a certain point each year, but this is more so in that they are transitioning to a new era around the same quarterback who won the Super Bowl. And they, by the way, gave him, you know, the largest contract in NFL history. So what they're trying to do is transition this roster. It started probably last year, a little bit more this year. You'll see a big change next year. So this team is kind of in that transitionary period as they're trying to still at the same time make the playoffs.
Wayne, one of the good things for the Packers this year, you finally found a running back. Tell us more about Aaron Jones, the exciting running back out of UTEP.
You know, I'll tell you something, Harry, he's one of those guys, I believe he was a fifth-round pick, and you sit there and say, well, how can you get quality in the fifth round? Well, isn't that where Jordan Howard came from? I mean, he's quality for the Bears.
Oh, yeah.
You can get running backs anywhere these days, but I'll tell you what, this kid has a special feel and vision. Great one-cut runner, makes excellent decisions as he moves up to the line, seems to have a good feel for the neck and patience that it takes to be a great running back. And you know, the only question on him is, can his body hold up to it? Last year, he ended the season on the injured reserve list. This year, they've been very careful with him. He doesn't get a lot of reps, but when he does, he's performed really well. He's been just outstanding, and he's a guy that, you know, every time you hand him the ball, there's a chance he could make a big play.
Sticking with the offense, this year in the NFL, there's been an influx of points being put up on the board. Are you a fan of this kind of new age NFL, what's going on right now?
You know what? No, I'm really a guy who, you know, I like defense. I really do. I thought the game the Rams and Bears played was just outstanding the other night. I thought that was great. That was great. That was poor quarterback play by two young quarterbacks, and that's going to happen. But that happens against good defenses. I know the Rams aren't a great defense, but they've got star power all throughout that defense on all three levels. They're not nearly as good a defense as like Minnesota or Chicago. And the Bears defense is just what a great defense to watch. I feel like in my career I had the honor to watch the best defense ever for one season, actually for a couple of seasons, the Chicago Bears of the mid-80s. That
Bears.
Was a great defense. And I can really appreciate this defense now and what they're doing, and all of us can in football.
Speaking of stars, we're visiting with Wayne Larrabee, flashing a little star power of our own. On your defense, I was surprised you guys moved Clinton Ha-Ha Dix to the Redskins. How has the Packers' secondary been since Dix got moved out east?
Well, you know, I think they're a little more efficient, but the thing that Clinton Dix brought, he would make the big play, but then would miss four or five other plays. And, you know, he wasn't a real good tackler on the back end of that defense, and Tremont Williams moves back to safety, and he gives them know-how. He's been in Mike Pettine's system. He knows the game. He gets everybody coordinated and lined up. A moment ago, we were talking about leadership. Who are some of the leaders besides Rodgers on the Packers? Well, Tremont Williams is one of them. And, you know, he has Super Bowl cachet with Green Bay. And so even though he went to Cleveland for a couple of years, played last year and played well at Arizona, he's back in Green Bay and has really been a very good influence on a young defensive secondary group. So, you know, they've been a little bit more efficient, but Harry, if you just take a look at the numbers, they're not getting a lot of turnovers defensively, and that's the thing that they have to change. They got a couple last week. They'll need to get a few tomorrow to have a chance.
You talk about how impressed you are with the Bears defense. I think the last time I checked, the Packers are getting six. If you were a betting man, would you put that down?
I'm not a betting man.
But if.
That's all I'll say about that.
Got it.
Wayne's too smart. Wayne has played this game before. Wayne knows all about it. You know, Mason Crosby has been money in the bank for the Packers for about 6.5 decades. This year he has had a couple of misses, and it's really surprising. Even for a Bears fan, I'm used to Crosby just knocking it through the uprights. Is that just a little blip on the screen?
You know, Harry, it's been an interesting year. He's missed more field goals this year than he has since 2012, when he had a real bad year that year. He hit 70-some percent of his kicks that year. It's interesting. He missed four in Detroit, okay? Mm-hmm. And since then, he's made 16 of his last 18. You know, so I would say that's a blip. But, you know, the other thing that, and I'm sure Mason, I know he's disappointed at this, he missed a 52-yarder, I believe, that would have beaten Minnesota.
Right.
Missed a 48-yarder that would have won another game, or at least gotten it to overtime, that kind of thing. You know, against the Cardinals, would have gotten the game to overtime, and maybe things would have been a little bit different. You know, but again, last week, tough day, kicking the football, and he, you know, nails two right through the uprights from distance, you know. So I still think he's money in the bank. I really do. And, you know, these guys are human. Julio Jones drops a few passes every game. Mason Crosby's going to miss a field goal every once in a while. These guys aren't video game people. They're real people, flesh and blood, and you have good days and bad days. And I think Mason's still one of the premier kickers in the league.
If they were video people, maybe my son would actually watch a football game with me. It's not good at all. I'll tell you who's great on Green Bay, and everybody knows this is 17, Devontae Adams. Boy, I mean, I just, if I, you know, obviously you can't get Rodgers, but if I could pull one Packer off the team besides, you know, Aaron Rodgers, it's Wayne Larrabee. I know Aaron Rodgers is awesome, but doesn't Devontae Adams help make Rodgers look so wonderful every game?
He's a great receiver. He's really become a great receiver, Harry. And, you know, he would have had 1,000 yards the last 2 years, but he ended the two seasons on IR, so he missed some significant time, and he was right at the cusp of the 1,000-yard season. This year he's been healthy throughout and really played terrific. And, you know, hey, there are a lot of great receivers in this league, but he's got to be in the top 10 of anybody's list right now. And I think he's going to the Pro Bowl, and he's rightfully so. He's had a great year, and he makes the tough catches. That's the thing. And the other thing, Harry, that's interesting, he goes up against the best cornerbacks each week. And he took Xavier Rhodes, and they had a tremendous battle on the outside. And he just, I mean, took maybe one of the best cornerbacks in the game and wore him down. And Rhodes eventually left with an injury. I mean, this kid, Devontae Adams, is the real deal.
He sure is. Hey, Wayne, I don't want you to be upset when tomorrow something happens that hasn't happened since September of 2018. That is, the Packers actually lose to the Bears here in Chicago.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen, Harry, but you know how it is. Hey, listen, it's great to be back on WGN Radio. You know, I spent some of the best years of my life on WGN in the 80s and 90s, and always have a fond memory of the place and everybody who works there.
Wayne, Joe and I were talking about that before you came on, is how long you were on WGN and the special seasons that you had with the Bears and the Bears had with you. And, you know, it's great that you'll be able to call one more game in a season where the Bears win the Super Bowl tomorrow.
Okay. You're not getting ahead of yourself now, are you?
No, I'm looking at it objectively, dude. Totally looking at it objectively.
And to be fair, Wayne didn't say no.
Right, right. I heard it right
You're taking the emotion out of it.
I'm taking all the emotion.
You know something? Here's the deal, guys. Let me tell you something about this. And anything can happen when you get to the playoffs. I saw that in 2010 with the Packers, okay? Anything can happen. But if you have the kind of defense they have, that travels. And I understand last year great defenses didn't do so well in the playoffs, but that's more of an anomaly than it is a regular occurrence. Great defense will translate into January, and I've got a feeling, you know, the Bears are a dangerous team. I don't care if they have to play wild card weekend. Nobody wants to play that defense, including the Rams in L.A. I guarantee you they don't.
Now, going back to not getting ahead of ourselves, but you said the best defense you witnessed was the Bears in the 80s. You talk about this defense. Not saying this defense compares to that one, but do you think it could have the potential to?
Yes, because they have star-making power on all three levels of that team. I mean, you know, you look at Hicks, you look at 91 in the middle, you look at those two inside linebackers. I think they've got some an excellent safety in Jackson. Eddie Jackson's just tremendous. And I think the Kyle Fuller is developing into a cornerback that's going to be better than Mike Richardson was. And Mike Richardson was pretty good for the 85 Bears, as was Les Frazier on that team. But Prince Amukamara has actually been outstanding for this Bears club. So, yeah, I think they have the potential. They're not there yet, that's for sure, but they have the potential to get there.
You're so classy, Wayne, because I want to say no way. I mean, I love this Bears defense, but that if Peyton doesn't fumble, if Peyton and Thayer don't collide on the second play of that Super Bowl, I think the Bears never bring the regulars off the field, and they shut out, the only shutout in Super Bowl history. But it is awesome that you have this perspective, Wayne. You, unlike me, you can be objective. It's always a treat to visit with you, and no matter what I think of the Packers, I respect the Packer fans, and I sure do as hell love the Packers play-by-play man. Thanks a bunch for giving us some time tonight, Wayne.
Hey, guys, happy holidays to both of you and your families, and thanks very much for having me on. Please don't hesitate to call in the future.
Okay, remember you said that. Wayne Larrabee, okay. He's a dagger when you need a great guest. Thanks, Wayne. We appreciate it. We will come right back with the Tariq Cohn song that so many of you are requesting. Joe Brand is here for Carm. I'm Harry. After the top of the hour, Steve Conroy, as our conversation switches to the Boys and Blades. This is WGN. You got the beat. You've got the beat on WGN Radio. Joe Brand is in for Karam. I'm Harry. And Joe, what did you just ask me as we went to break?
You have a Tariq Cohen song?
Doesn't everybody? So I love writing parody songs. I go for the humor. And I've got a friend, Alexi, who was a finalist on American Idol. I like it when he sings. Karam thinks it's funnier. And Dan Long, our executive producer, they laughed their butts off. Not because of the quality of the lyrics, but because I can't sing. So this is, with apologies to the Romantics, this is the Tariq Cohen song on the beat on GN.
Second and 10 coming up for Chicago. It's there for Cohen. He's going to outrace his blockers and outrace everybody. In the secondary he goes, and he will not be caught. Touchdown, Chicago. Tariq Cohen trying to find the hole, and he's into the end zone for a Bears touchdown.
No one knew his name on draft day. Most Cohens his size are a CPA. He starred at North Carolina A&T. Is that a college or a phone company? Best back at snagging spirals. His backflip catch went viral. Turn Bears playbook to a Bible. By run catch or return of the team, he's gonna burn. I see the defense is a freak. When the ball goes to Tariq, I see the defense is a freak. When the ball goes to Tariq.
Got it to Gustafson with 11. The key left point. The Gustafson straight away with a drive. He scores! Aaron Gustafson pounds it high and into the top shelf. Pass Brossois with 7 seconds left in the third. This one's going to overtime. The Hawks have tied it at 3.
We are becoming more consistent, I feel, both with our effort and our structure. I think we have been enough players that we can, if we do that, then we'll find a way to come through.
Blackhawks lost a heartbreaker last night to Winnipeg. They had a 2-1 lead, and next thing you know, the Jets are walking off the ice. 3-2 winners at the UC, but the Hawks will try again tomorrow night against the Sharks. It's a 5:30 pregame here on WGN with Chris Bowden, and then at 6:08, it's the puck drop with John Weideman, Troy Murray, and if it's a Hawks game, you know that Steve Conroy is going to be involved on TV. He skated many years for the Blackhawks, standing dudes up at his blue line. He wore number 5, and now he is a key component of all Blackhawks television broadcasts, whether sitting astride Pat Foley or keying the pre- and post-game and intermission reports. Steve Conroy, thanks for joining Joe Brand and myself on the beat on GN. How are you, Steven?
Harry, Joe, I'm doing great. And Harry, it was great seeing you the other day down at the studio, Sports Talk Live. I'm glad you're around and doing well.
Well, I'm definitely around. That part I can, I will concur with you with. It was great seeing you guys. And man, you are 4 now, 4 strong. You know, you were 4 strong that night. So I'm looking at you and Pat Boyle last night. You were, of course, part of the pre- and intermission team. You guys are wearing the classy, stripedy ties, looking very solid. And then you got Sharpie and Burrish. And Burr and Sharpie, they're dressing like they're hockey players still. So the first question is obvious. Who spends more time picking out wardrobe, getting ready for a broadcast, Adam Burrish or Patrick Sharp?
First off, they're from a different generation, and I think me and Pat are kind of we're the old guys on the crew. They're the young guys, and they bring a lot of energy, and they're going to bring some different clothes too. I would say of the two, we should throw Jamal in there because I think Jamal Mayers probably spends more time looking for his outfits than anybody else, and he's a very well dressed man. He's got great taste. Between Burzy and Sharpie, I'd have to say Burzy because Burzy's still single. Sharpie's got a family, and he doesn't have time for that silly stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess it is silly stuff. All right, so you're breaking the news here. Jamal Mayers is the clothes horse of the crew.
Yeah, he is. In fact, I think at one time Harry, he kind of, and he might still own a, or a partial owner of a men's clothing store, although he never gives us any free stuff, so maybe he's no longer involved with it. But I know at one time that he was involved with a suit or a tie company.
You say there's a generational gap with the wardrobe. Is there a specific year that there, a leap was made?
Well, you know what? I'm north of 50. I think Pat Boyle is close to that, too. Both of those guys, Bursey and Sharpie, I think they're both still in their 30s. So, yeah, that counts as a generation. So they're one generation behind us, and they're fashionistas, and we're just old guys trying to keep up.
Well, speaking of trying to keep up, the Blackhawks were doing a good job. Winnipeg was trying to keep up with them. They came back and they knocked off our Hawks 3-2. Under our new coach, we're playing Kane and Taves on the same line a lot, something Q only did, you know, once in a while. Do you like 88 and 19 on the ice together?
Well, I do. I mean, in certain situations, and of course on the power play, that's where you certainly want those guys together. But, you know, it didn't actually happen as much last game. Kaner was right. Skating with DeBrincat and Strome, and I thought Johnny's line was probably the strongest line from beginning to end. Of course, and he was teaming up with Brandon Saad and Dominic Cahoon, the German rookie who I thought maybe had his best game as a Blackhawk last night. So, yeah, he's gone nuclear. Jeremy's gone nuclear a couple of times, meaning getting, you know, Taves and Kane together. But he hasn't done it, you know, on a consistent basis. And, you know, it's the same old story, Harry. They played good enough to win and just bad enough to lose. And they shot themselves in the foot enough times to give that game away to the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, listen, I'm not here to say that, you know, I was perfect as a hockey player. And hockey, it's all about mistakes, but it's also about the timing of the mistakes. And, you know, when you let a guy in behind you when he's coming out of the penalty box, you're on a power play and you realize there's a guy coming out of the penalty box, you've got to be aware. Your goalie's banging a stick and if fans are down at the United Center and they see the goaltender smacking a stick on the ice, and they're trying to figure out what it is, it's to alert guys that there's a guy coming out of the penalty box, he's in behind you, and make sure that he doesn't get a pass because he's going to have a breakaway. Well, that happened last night, and that I think that tied the hockey game, if I'm not mistaken. So, actually, no, you know, they gave him the lead. That was the pro goal that gave him the 3-2 lead at the time. So, you get rid of a couple of those just mental mistakes, and you're going to be winning your fair share of games. And when the Blackhawks were going through that 8-game losing streak, there were 4 or 5 games I thought, honestly, they could have very easily won. They played good enough to win, but it was just, you know, the simple little mistakes. And whether it's, you know, having a new coach behind the bench or being a little gun shy because, you know, you've had a coach fired, you've had a pretty big name traded in the name of Nick Schmaltz. You know, the guys just weren't quite up to snuff. And hockey is such a close game now that, you know, one goal is typically what it takes to win a hockey game.
Before that go-ahead goal that you mentioned, and like you said, the Taves line was the most electric last night. Taves with 2 goals of his own. He's had such a good bounce-back year, but he's also had to play such the role of being the leader, more so than years in the past because of the way this season has gone. And it's kind of been unappreciative of how well he's done. Is that why he's been able to do so well this year, is because, you know, he's just so in that role right now of being the leader of the locker room?
Well, Joe, I think a couple things happened. And, yeah, they're leaning on him a little more because, you know, whenever you go through losing streaks or a coach gets fired or there's a bunch of new faces in the lineup, you know, it's kind of on the captain to pull everyone together and to lead. But I think more than that was, you know, he kind of rededicated himself in the offseason. He worked out extremely hard. You know, he didn't get stronger. He got faster and he got a little lighter. And, you know, I'm really noticing that on the ice. When he makes a cutback, you know, and everyone knows what a cutback is in football, but there's cutbacks in hockey too, and it's mostly through your edge work. And his edges right now, he just gets low to the ice and he's zigging and he's zagging and he's pulling away from guys. He's creating time and space, and you can see he's got the extra jump. So whatever he did in the off season, you know, certainly helped. And you know, we know Captain Sirius, and I'm sure nobody likes losing, or nobody hates losing as much as Johnny. And I'm sure those that 8-game losing streak they went through that lasted about 3 weeks was pretty hard on him. I know it was hard on the team. It was hard on the coaching staff. But that's when you show your true colors. And he was there after every game to answer the press and to stand up and to speak on behalf of the team. So, yeah, that's what we come to expect from Johnny. And, you know, it's good to see that he's having a bounce back here because, you know, I figured it out on the postgame show last night with 2 goals last night. He is on pace, believe it or not, for 38 goals this year.
Wow.
So Johnny right now has 16 goals. If he keeps up the pace he's had so far over, you know, the first 34 games, he'll end up with 38 goals. He's never had more than 34 in his career, so it would be a real strong season for him.
That would be awesome. The familiar voice is that of Blackhawk television analyst Steve Conroyd, Conroyd War number 5 for the Blackhawks, and he's visiting with us, hanging out on the beat. Joe Brand is in for Carm. I'm excited because Dylan Sakura is with the team, and he is a potentially, you know, big goal scorer. He can create offense, and I love the dude because he comes from a thoroughbred horse racing family. What should Blackhawk fans know about Dylan Sakura?
Well, Dylan Sakura, and I don't have my notes in front of me, but I think he played at Northeastern, which is a really good college for hockey. In fact, I think he was also nominated for a Hobie Baker, which is kind of like the Heisman Trophy of hockey. So, you know, he had a great college career. Now he's hoping to transfer that into the NHL. He had a taste of the NHL last year. I think he played in 4 or 5 games towards the end of last season when his college career was over. Then he got sent down to Rockford. And then, of course, this year he was hoping to make the team. He was one of the last cuts. He did not make the team, and so he was down in Rockford for, whatever, 25, 30 games, just got the call back. I still don't think that he's shown us what he's capable of, Harry. He's a very creative player. He likes to have the puck. He's a puck distributor, and haven't quite seen that yet from him. He's played, what, 2, 3 games so far for the Blackhawks. I think it'll come. I know sometimes you just need a little bit of familiarity, a little bit of seasoning, and it's a big jump from the AHL to the NHL, and he's certainly capable of making that leap. But right now, I think what I'd like to see him concentrate on is trying to control the play a little more, like hang on to the puck, make plays, and you certainly don't want to be turning it over in the neutral ice end. But listen, when you're down inside their blue line, it's okay to try and be fancy and set something up, and if the shot's there, take it, because he can shoot too. But I think the comparable is Johnny Gaudreau, because they're both about the same size.
Whoa, you're comparing him to Johnny Hockey. I love it.
Yeah, well, and, you know, they look similar. Johnny Hockey's probably a little quicker, but he's more mature, and he's a little older than Dylan Sakura. But I think eventually that's what Dylan Sakura will turn into.
I know the rough 8-game losing streak had a lot to do with the Hawks getting off to rough starts. And I know it's just been 2 games with a win over Pittsburgh and pulling out 1 point against Winnipeg, but those last 2 games they've had very solid starts. What's been the difference?
Well, it's funny, Joe. It's you know, sometimes it's almost like a self expectation, and you know, you start out in a couple of those games where they got scored on first, they had great first shifts and they're controlling it, and all of a sudden the other team would come down and they'd score a goal, and you'd see a collective kind of letdown on the bench, and you just look there and guys would get a little smaller and their shoulders would slump, and it was almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. They started to think that, you know, bad things are going to happen, and they kind of did. So the way they got out of it, though, was by working hard, and I think last night was a good example. They didn't score the first goal last night, but I thought they really competed, and I heard that little snippet you had on of head coach Jeremy Collin. He liked their compete level last night. I did, too. I thought the boards were unbelievable, the board battles, you know, in the trenches. You're up against the Winnipeg Jets team that's big. They're grinders. And they didn't back down at all. The Blackhawks, even though they're a smaller team, there was no backing down from them. I don't know if you guys saw the replay, but we showed it in the postgame show. Dustin Byfuglien absolutely ran over Alex DeBrincat, totally clean hit.
Oh, yeah.
Blew him out of the water. And, you know, Alex DeBrincat gets up and he's out there the next shift. So, you know, he gets up about 105 pounds, the big Buff, and there's no quit in that dog either. So I think that's what got them out of it, Joe, is their compete and just sticking with it. And sometimes it's tough to stick with it when you're losing, and they did. And you know, it's the analogy, and I know Harry will agree with this. You go on a diet, and then you lose 5 pounds the first week, and all of a sudden, you know, you can't lose any more weight anymore, and you just stick with it, and then 3 days later, you get back on the scale, and you've lost another couple of pounds. So, you know, the Blackhawks have just stuck with it, and they've been rewarded just for their persistence.
Yeah, because that was going to be my follow-up question. I mean, why has it been so difficult for them to stay consistent with that competitive edge? Because Winnipeg's the best team in the Western Conference, and they totally showed up last night against them.
Well, and they've been doing that a lot. We were in Winnipeg. We played Winnipeg now 3 times the last 16 days, right, which is crazy. But I remember the first time we played them up in Winnipeg. Winnipeg won 6-5, but it was one of those games where we were a goal away, so we could have won that one too. I think part of it, and I'll go back to what I talked about earlier, is just shooting yourself in the foot. Just, you know, hockey's a game of mistakes, but there's certain times in a game where you can't make a mistake, certain areas on the ice you can't turn the puck over. And they were doing that. And, you know, sometimes you got to learn the hard way. But there were 4 or 5 of those games during the 8-game losing streak. They very easily could have been, you know, coming out on the winning side of it. They weren't, you know, for whatever reason. It was either, you know, a poor special teams night where the power play wasn't good, the penalty killing allowed a few, the turnovers at our end, the coverage. I think especially early with Jeremy Collin, the coverage was a problem because there were just a lot of missed assignments right in front of our goaltender, and you know, that just can't happen. But haven't seen as many of those mistakes lately. Last night, like I said, very easily a game they could have won, and tonight will be tomorrow night will be another big test. The San Jose Sharks come to town, and they struggled out of the gates, but they're good, and they're another big team that, you know, can play any way you want. They can grind you down, they can finesse you, and they've got some defensemen on the back end who are elite guys in Brent Burns and Eric Carlson.
Where will we find you tomorrow night, Steve Conroy? Will you be with Lauren on Addison? Will you be sitting next to Pat at the UC? What, do you even know yet? Did they tell you at the last second?
Good question. You know what, Harry? I know I'm on GN, so it'll either be Lauren or Dan Rohn, and we will be outside of gates or section 102 on the concourse. I do not believe there's a pregame tomorrow. We will have a postgame, but we'll go downstairs for the postgame. So the only time it catches is between periods. So the first period intermission, second period intermission, we'll be out there on the concourse.
And so also, Roan doesn't work Sundays. Come on, he's too big.
Well, he has worked a couple Sundays with me. I'm not too sure. But you know what? Bears are on tomorrow, too. So I don't know if he wants to catch the Bears or us play, but I'll figure out who I'm with when I get there.
Right, and most fans will be catching both, you and the Bears, so hopefully we'll get a daily double tomorrow, Bears first and then the Blackhawks afterwards. And, you know, at some point it's got to get better. It can't get worse. And, you know, I always feel better. Now that Connor Murphy's healthy, I always feel better when there's number 5 on the blue line for the Blackhawks, Steve.
Well, thanks, Harry. Yeah, you know, and Connor had a couple of mistakes last night, you know, nothing major, but listen, he's just getting back, he's just rounding into form, and that's good, and I'm glad you remembered that there was another old number 5 in the Wayback Machine.
Oh yeah, hell and, yeah, Phil Russell.
Yeah, well that's right, Phil, and then Steve Smith took my number once I left, but Harry, you know what? You know what I love about you? You're thoughtful, you're funny, but you know sports, and you love sports. And I think that's probably the most important thing of all, is you've got a real passion for this, and always great to hear you, and good to see you, too.
Oh, you're a handsome man and an intelligent man. I love sports. sports will always be with me. Sports won't turn to me and get angry at me for no reason, like some spouses. Steve, always a pleasure. I will look forward to seeing the way you dress tomorrow night, and let's get a victory over the Sharks.
All right, that sounds great. Thanks, Harry. Hey, Joe, good talking to you, and enjoy the rest of your weekend, guys.
Likewise, Steve. I'll see you tomorrow night.
That is Steve Conroy, your Blackhawks television game analyst. Joe Brand is here for Carm. Joe and I will be right back after the news. A conversation that has nothing to do with sports that I think you guys will want to get involved in. When did you go for your driver's test? That's what I want to know, because my daughter is 18 and she still hasn't gone for her damn test. And guess who's picking her up tonight at 9 o'clock instead of watching the football game? Take a wild guess. That's right, Daryl's dad. I love her to pieces, but, you know, here's an idea. You get a permit, go take your driver's test. Parents, do you have 18-year-olds that haven't gone for their test yet? And didn't you go the day you turned 16? We'll talk about that after the news. Hannah Stanley takes over at 7 o'clock. This is The Beat with Joe Brand and Harry Tynowitz. We are taking a little break from sports for a sec. Bears will knock off the Packers tomorrow. First half of your Daily Double, they will be division champs after tomorrow afternoon, and the Packers will lose for the first time since the 2010 season at Soldier Field. And also the Blackhawks will be the second half of the Daily Double. Hawks hockey here tomorrow night. Bowden's got your pregame at 5:30. John Weideman, Troy Murray, all the action. Puck drop 6:08. Blackhawks and San Jose Sharks. My daughter, for whatever reason, turned, I know why she turned 18 last weekend, but I don't know why she still hasn't gone for her driver's license. Joe Brand went when he was 16. Dan Long, our executive producer, went when he was 16. I went the day I turned for I turned 16. I did not pass. Here is Bob near Midway, 312-981-7200. Why aren't kids going for their licenses? And does anybody else have a story they remember about their first attempted a license and why they didn't pass? Hey, Bob, you're on The Beat on GN.
Hi, how are you?
We're pretty good, sir. What's growing on in your world?
My son, when he turned 16, I took him out driving. I tried to teach him, you know, stop, turn left, whatever you're going to do. And he looked at me and goes, I know how to drive. And I went, okay. He goes, I don't need you to teach me. And I says, well, if I'm not going to teach you how to drive, you can't drive my car. And he goes, okay, I'll wait till I'm 18 years old. The day after, 2 years, he never drove. The day after he turned 18 years old, he goes, I'm ready to drive. And I took him to the DMV. I said, you want to drive while you go there? And he goes, no, I'm fine. We went to the DMV on 87th in Harlem. And he got in the car. And they come back and the DMV lady, how do you do? He goes, he's a great driver. He's the first one that ever used a turn signal in a parking lot, and he passed. I was so disappointed.
Bob, what time do you go to bed?
You know what? We live by Midway Airport, and he went to Lane Tech High School, so he took the train and the buses every day. I know he never drove.
But you don't think maybe he swiped the keys while you were asleep and started driving around? Maybe
because my brother stole my car, so I always hid my keys.
Okay, well, somehow,
I learned that lesson early in life.
Bob, somehow your son was driving. Nobody can just get behind the wheel and suddenly be a great driver good enough to pass their test.
I think he was just so paranoid that even to this day, and he's 25 years old now, literally, if it says 25 miles an hour, he does 25 miles an hour. He literally stops at every stop sign, and it kills me because I love the California roll.
Yeah, I mean, are you sure?
I come up and there's nobody around, I roll through it. And he looks at me every time and says, you can't do that.
When I turned 16, that's what I wanted to do right then and there. Go get my license so could drive. It astounds me how kids would not want that.
Bob, you know, I hate to burst your bubble, but your son had to have driven. He was driving. They don't teach it in school.
He did a driving class at Lane.
Uh huh.
And actually, the person he was in the car with, as they drove out of the parking lot, drove into, I guess it would be a pillar in the parking lot, going out of the parking lot.
So the bar was just set really low, and your son did all right then.
Yes.
That's not good for anybody.
But he was so scared that he goes, so now he's like, he doesn't break any rules of the road. It disappoints me.
Bob, it sounds like you got a stand-up kid, and you just keep talking about how upset you are he's not breaking the rules.
Bob, we appreciate the call. Thank you very, very much. 312-981-7200. If you have a kid who still has not gone for their driver's test, it's particularly aggravating to my wife and I because Lucy wanted to go to... So when I was in high school, every kid took driver's ed in school. And now Lucy's at Evanston, and there's like 20 kids out of 900 that actually get to take the class in school. Everybody else goes to, like, you know, driving school. And she wanted to go when all her friends were going. So she's had her permit since before she was 16. She's had it for over 2 years and has still not gone. And she's very active. You know, bless her. She's on, you know, she's on the debate team. She is in band, color guard. She's on stage crew. And she constantly needs rides. And I'm happy to pick her up, but it'd be nice if she would know how to drive.
It is funny, because isn't that the old adage with parents? I can't wait till they're old enough to drive, and then once they get to that age, let me borrow the car.
What does a kid say that grows up in a mobile home? Dad, could I have the house tonight? You know, when I turned 16, I went that morning, and I drove the best I ever drove in my life. I couldn't believe it. I was high-fiving myself. I nailed it. I did everything. I parallel parked. That was my big thing I couldn't do. You know, now, after living in Chicago, I lived in Lincoln Park forever. I lived in Wrigleyville. Now, parallel parking, I can do it blindfolded. In fact, for a while there, I was. But
show off.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, it's just nuts to me. I did not pass my first test because when I changed lanes, I did not use my turn signal. I drove as great as I could, but I did not use my turn signal. And the guy said, I can't pass you. You got to use your turn signal.
When I turned 16, my ankle was broken and I had a boot.
Did you not pay a bookie?
No, it's just something. It's a weird tradition my family does.
What does a 16-year-old kid bet on?
Just a weird tradition my family does where we break ankles every year, but... So I had a boot, and
were you trying to tackle Jarrett Payton?
No. So I had a boot. I couldn't take the test. I had to wait to get the boot off. Got the boot off. Go to get my driver's license. At that point, you could do the test prior, and then just show them your slip, like, "Hey, I passed," and then get your license. But they always had check dates. I don't know if they still do that or not. But check dates are random dates, and if your birthday lands on a check date, you have to do the test at the DMV. Because you could take the test prior, so you don't have to wait through the long line. So my birthday lands on a check date, and my birthday's in January. There was about 5 feet of snow. They said, we're not doing the test today. So I went to that DMV about three times after I turned 16 before I could actually get my license. It was just a long process. And again, it was excruciating for me because I wanted to drive. So I still can't believe kids these days don't just want to get behind the wheel.
Yeah, I really don't get it. I mean, it makes no sense to me. I don't know why that would happen. Richard is in the city. Richard, thanks for calling WGN. You're on the beat with Joe and Harry. What's going on, Rich?
I have no idea. My daughter is 28, my son is 24, and my youngest will turn 18 in January, and none of them have gotten their license until they were 18. And my sons both play ice hockey, and guess who's had to drive them to practice at 9:50 at night during the week? And it's like, dude, get your license. And they're like, oh, I don't feel like driving now. And I'm like, huh, they're nuts. I don't get it. Now, maybe it's because they live in the city, so they have public transportation. They're used to going downtown. But, I mean, I know I got my license when I turned 16. I also got my first ticket when I turned the day I got my license.
You got your first ticket. That didn't take long. Was it a speeding ticket? What was it?
Yeah, it was. And it was actually the cop let me go. It was in Florida. He goes, when he pulled me over for speeding down a side street, he said, it's still warm from the lamination.
I'll tell you, if you're respectful, and you should be, if you're respectful of police officers and you are honest with police officers, I believe that they will not ticket you. You know, if you're doing something awful, you're going to get ticketed. But I think if you're going like 8 miles over and, you know, you say, officer, I'm sorry, I was thinking about it. If you lie to him and say, officer, I wasn't going over 20.
The courtesy slow down the highway when you pass a cop and then you just flash the brakes on for a little bit, just a little courtesy.
Right. Like, you know, hey, I know I was going kind of fast, but as soon as I passed you, I stopped. So, Bob, I mean, they're playing hockey. They've got they love hockey, and I know a lot of hockey practices, you know, are either late at night or early in the morning. You couldn't, you know, put your foot down there and, you know, put your skate down and say, hey, you know, if you guys want
to
play.
I try to entice them. I have a 69 GTO convertible that my dad owned brand new in 69. I'm like, dude, if you get your license, you could take this to prom. You know, it's pretty cool, but nah, I don't know what it is. He says, well, I want to drive it. I said, you can't drive it until you learn how to drive a real car, because this thing is a lot more powerful than you ever can imagine.
Yeah, that's the thing. Your first car has to be something you can break in a little bit.
Yeah, or break.
Yeah, exactly.
But that one you can't. You can't break that one.
Or break into. Yep. All right, we appreciate the phone call, Rich. Now my question is, will she go before she's 19? She's been 18. She's been 18 for 8 days. I wonder if she'll go before she's 19.
Maybe it's just now a thing now, just to see how far she can push it for you.
I just don't get it. I mean, I was asking my family, hey, can I go get anybody a burger? Anybody need anything from the pharmacy?
I remember the first day driving without somebody else in the car, and it felt so illegal. Like, am I doing everything okay? I remember going the exact speed limit, and I remember thinking, if I drive the speed limit, I hit every green light, because I feel like that's what happened on my way home from the DMV. I'm like, so that's why there's a speed limit, so you catch every green light. And then I later found out that was just a small sample size.
Small sample size, yeah, red lights. There's more red lights in the world than there are green lights. We will be right back. Joe has an unbelievable story about what some teams will do to make sure that they can play Illinois in basketball. Don't go anywhere. This is The Beat on WGN Radio. Joe Brand and for Mark Carmen. Not as much tension in the studio today. Not as much sexual tension either. And I'm Harry. We are on The Beat. Hannah Stanley is coming up in about, 15 minutes. Right now we want to tell a story about what happened. You know, Illinois used to be the powerhouse of college basketball in the Big Ten, and now teams will go to any length to make sure that they get a date with them. And Jay Sandoz is the voice of the East Tennessee State Buccaneers. He is buddies with Joe, so he's giving us a little time tonight. Jay, thanks for coming on WGN and The Beat. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thank you for having me on.
All right, Jay, so from East Tennessee to Champaign, I would imagine that only takes you about, what, maybe 3 or 4 hours? How long did it take you?
Well, you know, if you have a good flight, like my athletic director had today, it was a 58-minute direct flight. When you fly commercial, give or take, with a connector, it's maybe 3 hours. You drive in a bus, like we're going home now, it's about 8.5, 9 hours. But when you took the direct approach we did yesterday, which was get to the airport at about 11:30 in the morning, fly to Atlanta, find out a flight's canceled. Actually, it was delayed twice, then canceled, then be redirected to Chicago Midway, and then from there have the bus that was going to meet you in Bloomington to come over to break down, then have the bus driver not be able to Uber because he didn't have an Uber account and the credit card he had was declined. So then he had to catch a taxi. And while that was going on, the best part was our luggage didn't make it. So we sat there an additional 4 hours for them to hand put basically all the bag tags into the system to make sure it was going to be flown to Champaign. And then when we finally got on the bus, I guess we got in the hotel about 3:30 Central, which has been 4:30 our time, which, you know, it was a pretty good day from 11:30 to 4:30.
Jay, I know this has probably been an exhausting, tiring last 18 hours for you and the team, but I'm sure a few years from now you're going to look back on it and laugh. The reason Jay and I are connected, Parker Schwartz was one of my broadcast partners in minor league baseball, mm-hmm. So I get the travel anxiety with long road trips and such like that. The one person you never want to be around on a tough day like that is the manager or the coach. How were the head coaches or the coaching staff completely? How were their emotions, Jay?
Well, you know, the first part of it wasn't that bad because the reason the flight got canceled was due to safety concerns, and I think we all agree, if you know, we'd rather cancel flight to make sure the safety of everybody getting where you need to go. So really no issue there. And then we were told the bags, because it was a five-hour delay when we actually booked the next flight, that the bags would be there no issue. Then we land in Chicago. You know, you can't do anything about a bus breaking down. I mean, it's just a thing that happens. So you kind of wash that off. Then you find out your bags aren't. You're trying to keep cool because it's late at night. You're trying to just, you know, obviously trying to make sure the players are, you know, kind of feeding off your energy, right? So if you're kind of down and livid, you know, it kind of makes it okay for them to be that. So it really wasn't that bad because we were told that they were going to fly the bags to Bloomington the next day and then bus it the hour up to our hotel so that we would have shoes, uniforms, radio gear, everything you need for a traveling team to play a game. And then we got a call in the morning that the bags did fly to Bloomington, but they weren't delivering them. We had to go get it. So that's when things got a little dicey because we actually had to leave an hour to go get it, come back. We basically got our bags 2 hours before the game, and we basically just took the bags, went straight to the arena. Everybody got dressed there, the coaching staff and myself. We didn't even put on suits and ties. I was still in a jogging suit. They were in sweats. And I mean, it was, we were just trying to get the game going. And so I think that was the frustrating part, was if the bags could have just been delivered to us and saved us a couple of extra hours, just to make things right. I think that was the kind of the icing on the cake to where at that point, while our basketball ops guy was driving to get the uniforms, the decision was made not to fly home the next morning. You know what? Let's spike the bullet. We'll just get a bus. We'll go all the way home and not have to deal with any more travel because of all the other issues, and can get the guys that really slept maybe 2-3 hours last night, be able to get them in their own bed, about 1 a.m. Eastern, maybe 1:30 Eastern, and then those guys can sleep it off all Sunday, take a day off. So it really got to when the bags weren't delivered. I think that's when the blood pressure went. We had to grab head coach Cecil's cell phone so he could get off Twitter for a minute, just trying to calm him down.
Jay, now I heard that this isn't the so it took you guys forever to get there. But I heard that some of the Illinois starters had trouble getting in the game as well.
The Illini guys.
Yeah, what happened there? Three starters were late.
Yeah, all I was told right before the game was, "Hey, we're going to have a little different looking lineup," and then. And about the first second media timeout, they came down and handed a note. As a lot of times people hold information on you, as you can imagine. And just handed a note that the guys were tardy and weren't going to be available. And so I wouldn't give any more information on that. I knew who they had been starting. And then, of course, you take your own notes, do whatever, and circle some things. And in the same token, also dropped on them that there was a kid that actually Brad Underwood had recruited at Oklahoma State, who's a 7-foot transfer at ETSU now, and was granted a last-minute waiver to be eligible the second semester. And so he got eligible yesterday, actually during the debauchery of the travel. So I got to drop on them. Oh, by the way, there's a 7-footer that you haven't even heard of that's not on this roster. Going to show up with a uniform and didn't have a last name. So between the two of us. And the funny part was, is we had actually talked to Illinois about if the uniforms didn't get to us, there was a shot we were going to wear one of their colored uniforms, rather the white or the blue. They were orange today. And we had our athletic director, who took a private flight, go by and get uniforms. So there was a chance Illinois was actually going to buy us a few pairs of shoes. So guys had shoes to play. And we could have been wearing the same jerseys and same numbers, just a different color there. And I was joking with Brian, they're playing with play. I was like, man, good luck with that. You know?
Yeah, no kidding.
You'd even deal with that. That'd be like one of the worst experiences ever. It's bad enough you got to learn another team, but then when they're wearing completely different jersey numbers and last names, that's got to be tough.
Well, Jay, we wish you no more delays at all this season. And you guys, despite everything, made it on time. And three Illinois starters who live like 10 blocks from the stadium couldn't get there on time. That's not good. Jay Sandoz, East Tennessee State University basketball announcer, thank you for your time. Joe Brand and I back to say hi to Hannah Stanley, who will take the show reins over after a Dave Jennings update at 7 o'clock. This is WGN.